Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon, on the road for the next 3 weeks. So if it sounds a little different, there you go. We are broadcasting three great events for Fox. So I'll be bustling around the planet, around planet Earth here for the next little bit, but can't not get you some podcasts, especially after the final major of the year. But a fun show today. Mr. 58 himself, Steven Yeager, joins us a little bit later to go over his historic round and really his historic week. Played absolutely out of his mind, broke pretty much every record that's out there on the web.com tour this past weekend. As always, if you want to get in touch with us, follow us at Shane Bacon, at the Clubhouse Pod. Use the hashtag ClubhouseSB for any and all questions. And of course, email us theclubhousewithshanebacon@gmail.com if you have any questions, comments, etc. And just like that, the major season is over. If my countdown is correct, we're some 246 days away from the Masters. That's depressing. 316 days away from Erin Hills in the U.S. Open. So it's worthy to spend a moment reflecting on what we just watched and what just happened. Of course, Jimmy Walker wins the PGA on Sunday. And I'll say this, the insanity of the major season came so fast, but it ended, I feel, even quicker. I mean, we knew there was going to be three majors played in 45 days. Oakmont seems like forever ago in a weird way. Maybe it was because it was such an insane week to work and the hours were so crazy with the weather delay. But the Open Championship seems like yesterday as well. I mean, it really seems like it just wrapped up. And then we roll into this PGA Championship, also have some weather issues. It was an interesting week, I'll say that. You know, the Dustin Johnson thing was weird. Shoot 77 in the first round, has played flawless golf really all summer. Rory misses the cut, has a 5-iron in on his second shot on Friday, needing to make just a par or a birdie to make the weekend, makes a sloppy, sloppy six, misses the cut, and of course, the flaws of his game. You know, golf is a weird sport. Golf exposes what you do wrong the most of anything out there, more than tennis, more than baseball, more than basketball. Rory's putting has been an issue all year long, and he's been able to maintain it because he's hitting the ball so well, and the PGA Championship seemed to really kind of define his season. I mean, he was number one in strokes gained with off the tee, and yet misses the cut because he putted so poorly. I thought his post-round interview was very interesting, just to hear how disappointed he was with his short game, with his putting, how frustrated he looked on the golf course, which is understandable. I mean, if you and I are playing golf and we're missing putt after putt after putt after putt, we would equally be just as frustrated. But, you know, when you look back over the major season, you know, we have four new major winners. And I thought it was pretty interesting how similar the wins were. I mean, if you look at Danny Willett, final round was flawless, 567, didn't make a bogey. Of course, he got some help, but he still played the round he needed to play to win. You look at Dustin Johnson, clinches his first major with probably the shot of his life on the 18th, arguably the toughest closing par four, not only in golf, but in U.S. Open Rota, to finish off his championship with a birdie, shoots 69, even with a penalty. You know, you look back at Henrik Stenson playing against a man with multiple majors. Stenson shoots that final round 63 up against Phil Mickelson with a 65. Did what he had to do, played perfect, perfect golf for the final 18 holes, really the entire tournament there at Royal Troon. And then we get Jimmy Walker in a position battling the number one player in the world who is trying to chase him down. Jason Day struggled a bit early in that round, but got it going, started making putts, started hitting golf shots. Jimmy Walker doesn't make a bogey over his final 28 holes, shoots a closing 33, never saw a moment of nerves really come out of Jimmy Walker. He struggled a bit to get it going. I mean, it took him a while to make that birdie, but that bunker shot goes in, and it just seemed to loosen him up, and you just saw a comfortable Jimmy Walker in that moment. And on top of all that, you know, I'm not sure we've ever had a year of all first-time major winners with four guys better equipped to add another major to their resume. I mean, if you look back at the last 2 years that it's happened where all the major winners have been first-time winners, and you know, the last two obviously fresh in our minds, but 2011, you know, you get Schwartzel, you get Rory, Darren Clark, Keegan Bradley. I think it's safe to say that, you know, even at the time, Darren Clark's Open seemed that it would be the one and only for him. I mean, he was a little bit older. He did it in crazy fashion, coming out of absolutely nowhere, you know, holding off Dustin Johnson charge and winning that one. I think if Schwartzel or Keegan Bradley won another major, it would be a little surprising. I think Schwartzel has a better chance considering some of Keegan's short game woes over the past year and a half or so. And of course, 03, I mean, the most random year in the history of major golf. Feinstein writes the whole great book about it. Mike Weir, Jim Furyk, Ben Curtis, Sean McKeel winning those majors. They did that during the peak of Tiger, Phil Mickelson, Ernie Els, Vijay Singh. Think about that for a second. Tiger in 03 is coming off a couple of seasons of major golf like we'd never seen before. And the major winners are Mike Weir, who holds off Lynn Matisse, Jim Furyk, who of course, you know, is probably a Hall of Famer, Ben Curtis coming out of absolutely nowhere, and Sean McKeel. You know, Sean McKeel battling Chad Campbell, of all people. So when you look at that group of people, Jim Furyk, of course, has been very close before to win another major. You know, the other three, not so much. I just think when you look at the guys that won it this year, you look at Danny Willett, a top 10 player in the world, Dustin Johnson, probably will win 2 to 3 to 4 majors in his career if he just does what he's supposed to do a couple of more times. You know, you get Henrik Stenson. I mean, he's 40 years old, but this is a top 5 player, a guy that's finishing second and first so many times, getting himself in the conversation. It's just when that putter wakes up, a lot like Dustin Johnson, he's right there. I think of all those players, the one that might surprise you the most to win another major is Jimmy Walker. But the way he played down the stretch, the way he played that Sunday, he looked so comfortable in the moment. Even on 18, and I think a lot of people, including myself, were a bit confused on the going-for-it decision on 18. He knew what he was doing. I mean, if you look at some of the stats, he was so good at going for greens and par fives, going for them and making birdies, making numbers. And he did that again. He hits that 3-wood up there to the right. Of course, he bailed out on an area he probably wishes he wouldn't. I mean, I don't think you want to short side yourself, but still, he hit that golf shot. I think a lot of guys wouldn't have been comfortable doing that in that moment. I think you would have seen a lot of irons pulled out and laid up. Walker stuck to his guns, did what he'd been doing all week long, and was able to make that 5. And, you know, I mean, he had a 3-footer. I mean, that putt was not easy. I mean, that's an easy, easy putt to shove or pull, and he buried that thing dead center. So, you know, this is a group of first-time major winners that I think if they won 4 or 5 more majors combined, I don't think it would be that surprising. I mean, Danny Willett is a hell of a player. I mean, people might not know him over here as much as they do in Europe, but this is a guy that contends and wins big golf tournaments all the time. And of course, Dustin, Stenson, these are some of the best players in the world. So while it has been a season of first-time major winners, I'm not sure it's a surprising season of first-time major winners given the names we've seen. And as we talk about that, I think it's officially time to give the hope and the hype of a big anything. I was at Fall Ford earlier this year. I mean, Ricky Fowler wins and almost wins the Waste Management. And I'm sitting there saying, is this a big 4 situation? I fell into the trap. I completely am guilty of this just as much as so many other people are. But bring the violas out. This thing is done. There is no big anything. Golf is just too deep right now. It's 2016. You're seeing a ton of great players. You're seeing the top 10 and the top 15 and the top 20 in the world shuffle up. I mean, you're seeing names like Andy Sullivan and Cabrera Bayo and these players that have so much talent and have the capability of winning a major or two in their careers. Yet we focus so much on the Rory, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day thing because they went on a run from the end of 2014 through 2015, where they won all the majors except one, and Zach Johnson got that one British Open. And oh, by the way, Jason Day and Jordan Spieth were a shot out of that playoff and had a chance as well at St. Andrews. So, you know, they did what they had to do to at least get us thinking about it. But I think 16 showed us that, again, golf is just too deep. There's so many great players out there, and they're just getting better. I mean, you look at somebody like, you know, we focus so much on Bryce and DeChambeau. But look at John Rahm. I mean, this is a guy that comes out of Arizona State. If you look at some of his finishes as an amateur, he's got so much talent. The PGA Tour is just getting deeper and deeper. And, you know, I'd love to see Rory and Jordan Spieth and Jason Day come out and win a major or two next year. But if they didn't, again, it's not that surprising. You've got to play perfect golf these days out of 4 of 52 weeks to have a chance at a major. And, I mean, you saw it this year. Look at Phil Mickelson. Played flawless golf, didn't win the major. I mean, you look at Jordan Spieth. Put himself in a great position to dominate and take the Masters, had one bad hole, and it cost him. It cost him another green jacket. And I just think it's interesting when you look at these things. Jason Day probably hit the best golf shot we'll never remember on the 18th green at the PGA. I mean, you think about that. He goes iron off the tee, knows he needs to make an eagle, doesn't birdie 17, which, by the way, and I heard the no laying up guys talk about this on the podcast, the 17th is just that is just not a great hole. It is not a great penultimate hole to finish on a major. I love the par five finish idea, but I don't love it when you have to play to a number and wedge it up close. I just wish that hole was out. No offense. It's just not a very fun par five. It's not really a par five. I don't really feel like there's any risk reward to it. It's just a long, long hole. Sorry, that was my little rant. But, you know, Jason Day hits that 2-iron, probably one of the best golf shots he's ever hit in his life, given the moment, rolls in the putt, even after looking up at the scorecard and having that Morgan Pressel reaction, knowing that it's probably not going to be enough, even if he makes that putt. And there you go. I mean, these guys are playing the type of golf they need to play to win, and they're still not capable of doing it because somebody plays better that week. So the big three, the big four, the big five, whatever, it's done. Let's hang it up. We got to wait until these guys do something incredible, like win all four majors in a season or have another run like they did in 14-15, and I just don't see it happen. And I could see one of the big three, quote-unquote, winning something next year, but I just think that now it's a big 30 or a big 40 because there's so many of these guys coming up. And I'm looking at the top 100 in the world right now. My way too early prediction for the next major breakthrough in 2017 and beyond, you know, if you're looking at these the top 100 and you're thinking, who can do what happened this year, next year, my list in order is Brennan Grace, of course, put himself in position again this past week at the PGA. You look at Brooks Koepka. On one leg, played incredible, inspired golf. If he doesn't make the Ryder Cup, I might not watch it this year. I already mentioned Cabrera Bayo. I think he's got a ton of talent and made the cut in all four majors this year, as did Kevin Kisner, an American that doesn't get nearly as much fanfare. And then Tyrrell Hatton. I mean, these guys are playing great, consistent golf in all the majors. And that's what you have to do. You have to get comfortable in the moment. I think that's what's really important. And lastly, since the major season's over, and I talked about this on Twitter, even saw Scott Van Pelt talked about this a little on SportsCenter yesterday. In 10 years, what moment are we going to remember from 2016? And that's my question. So are we going to remember the 2-iron at Baltusrol? Are we going to remember the way Stenson, the 50-footer Stenson made, you know, in the final round to really close it out? Are we going to remember Gorse the horse? You never know. He could remember that. So my ranking is this, and this is not to focus on any negatives. It's just what we're going to remember. If you think about 86, you remember Nicklaus, but if you think about 06, you remember Wingfoot. You know, I mean, that's just how this works. That's how our memories work. You know, you remember guys that win golf tournaments, you remember guys that lose golf tournaments. If I ask you a moment in Scott Hoke's career, there's no other moment you're going to talk about initially but the putt at the Masters. That's just how this goes. So number one is Jordan Spieth's 12th hole at the Masters. That's the thing we're going to remember the most. He already has the green jacket, considering the way he's played at the Masters. Second his first year, wins the second year, has the big lead this year and can't close it out. If he wins another green jacket or three, we're still going to look back at 2016 and say, what could have been? He had that huge lead. He has a huge lead on Saturday and lets it slip. It just kept slipping away, kept slipping away, kept slipping away. But the way the 12th happened, I think, is the number one memory from the 2016 major season. Number two, positive. This is a positive. See, I told you we'd go that way. Number two to me is Henrik 63 versus Phil 65. You know, the duel over there at Royal Troon was so much fun to watch. We kept waiting for Phil to get on top or to at least get right there. He played such good golf. I think if Phil looks back on his career, there'll be disappointments for sure. I already mentioned Wingfoot. I think about Shinnecock. You know, you think about so many majors he's been close at. I think the one that'll bug him is this one, because he played such good golf for 72 holes and just ran into somebody that was better that week. And I wonder if, you know, hitting it left on 18 at Wingfoot, I mean, and making a bad decision with the second shot, you know, that is a mental error. But not being able to nudge a guy off the cliff there like he could have with Stenson, Stenson just never let it go. And so I think that battle between those two was the best golf, definitely the best golf we saw all year, and one of the most fun things that we will remember, because when we look back at how Phil finished his career, we'll say, remember how he could have won another Claret Jug? I think number three is DJ and the ruling at Oakmont. It didn't affect the outcome, which was nice, but I just think that the whole buildup and the reaction on social media and all that stuff, that will be very important. And really, the way DJ handled it, never let it affect him, kept on the gas, was able to close that thing out. And then number four, and this is something that I really will remember because it's really hard not to, is Jason Day's second shot into the 18th and what would have happened if that would have really mattered. Of course, it did make Jimmy Walker make a par, but what would have happened if say, Jimmy Walker's putt doesn't catch that lip on 17 and curl in? Now he's got to make a five from right in that heavy stuff after going for the green and two, knowing he needed a birdie to win. I do think that, you know, again, given the circumstances, that Jason Day second shot was about as clutch as it gets, really. And, you know, you talk about Jason Day wanting to be Tiger Woods. You know, he's number one in the world. He's gotten a lot more fit. Even the injury talk, you know, when you think about the way Jason Day talks about injuries and the way Tiger seemed to always have something going towards the end of his career, there's some similarities there. Even the Jason Day turnaround and stare down. I mean, you know, these are things that Tiger liked to do. So those were the four that I'll remember from major season. A fun major season. You know, it wasn't last year. I mean, it wasn't Spieth going back-to-back and then Zach Johnson winning a playoff and then Jason Day holding off Jordan Spieth. I mean, it wasn't that, but they were four individual fun events. You know, the Masters was fun because of the meltdown. The U.S. Open was fun because the controversy and Oakmont. And really, I mean, you think about the run Jason Day made towards the end, and then he makes double on 17, and Jim Furyk got so close and makes bogey at 18. And, you know, there was a lot of things happening at Oakmont that week. And, of course, Dustin Johnson hitting the golf shot of his life to win. You know, you think about Stenson versus Phil, and then, you know, you go to Baltusrol and you look at Jimmy Walker, and I think the whole time golf fans were going, is he going to collapse? Is he going to have a moment where he falls apart? And he just didn't. He just won a major. And I think that was the most impressive thing, not only of Jimmy Walker's career, of course, but, you know, when you think about guys that need motivation, guys that have never won majors, they'll have to look at Jimmy Walker and say, he did it. I can do it as well. So a fun major season. That being said, the story of the weekend, in my opinion, was Steven Yeager on theweb.com. Shoots 58 in the first round and then really never let off the gas. So we will talk to Yeager next. Thanks for joining us here on the Clubhouse. We will introduce Mr. 58 himself. And we now welcome into the Clubhouse a man who stole the show from a major championship this weekend, Steven Yeager, an opening round 58. Yes, 5-8 was then followed by rounds of, and I hope you're sitting down when I say this, 65, 64, 63 to set the 18, 36, and 54-hole scoring record on the web.com tour, and of course, the 72-hole scoring record as well. Steven, I usually ask pros on the podcast what they've had to eat today, but I'm changing it for you. What did you have to eat the morning before you went out and shot that historic 58?
Nothing special, I got to tell you that. It didn't feel different. I didn't feel different on the range. I got there pretty early, practiced a little bit, and worked out, and it wasn't anything. I wasn't on the range being like, wow, today is going to be the day. I wish that would come more often, but it definitely wasn't. But no, I, you know, did the same thing I normally do on afternoon tea times. I get there pretty, not early, but like 9 o'clock, and kind of spend some time out there so I don't have to sit in my hotel room all morning. So.
Well, you're in a safe place here, so I trust you'll be honest, because this question comes up so many times. Golfers who, you know, go real low or you know, break 60, for goodness sakes. But how many times were you thinking about it during the round, if at all?
The whole back nine, pretty much. I birdied 10 and 11, my 10th and 11th hole, and you're 8 under with, you know, 7 holes to go, 2 par 5s, and par 70, so you know you're close, and obviously you're playing good, and you know, and then I actually on third hole on the par 5, I hit on the green and 3 putter for par, which I was like, wow, you know, that just kind of put a damper on things a little bit. But yeah, I came out, birdied the next 3 holes, and you know, I was 11 under through 6. And then made 2 good pars on 7 and 8. And, you know, you never know what's going to happen. On 9, I played pretty conservatively and hit a 3-wood and lay it up and wedged it to, you know, 10 feet and happened to make the putt. That was definitely the icing on the cake.
Yeah, and what were your playing partners like, you know, as you got to the back nine? I mean, were they talking to you, or did they go the whole no-hitter route where they just kind of avoided you at all costs?
No, we don't really go that route on golf. Like, you want to keep it as calm as possible. So, you know, we talked, and we we obviously didn't talk about that. I mean, they didn't like, hey, if you birdie one more hole, you're going to shoot 58. It wasn't like that. But, you know, you talk about anything, really, like we do on a normal round. And then, I mean, they were super happy afterwards. I saw Diego. That was, I think he's in the picture on the, when I made that putt. As exciting as it was for me, I'm sure it was exciting to watch for them as well. But, it's cool to have, you know, all the guys stay afterwards and a couple buddies, stay on the ninth green afterwards and congratulate me and stuff. So it's cool to see that camaraderie and stuff. So,
yeah. And I was wondering, you know, do you feel in a way that the fact that it was happening on a Thursday helped? Because, you know, if you shoot 65 or 55 on Thursday, you still have a long way to go before you win on Sunday. Do you feel like an opening round actually helped a little bit?
I don't know. I mean, I was being asked if you know, what, how do you back up a 58? And I had no clue because I never shot it before. So, you know, you just never know. You never know what you're going to do afterwards. And I was just trying to stay in what I was doing. And I don't know if it helped or if it hurt. I mean, it didn't hurt, obviously, but it's hard to focus with all the hype and all the, you know, all the media outlets and stuff nowadays to focus on what you want to do the next 3 days. That was the only thing that I could think of. I had to really focus on making sure that I stay on task for what I wanted to do that week, especially after, you know, a first round like that. You're leading by four and you're playing well. So you want to continue that good streak. So that's what I was trying to do Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah. And you already mentioned the ninth hole. You said you played it a bit conservatively. It was your final hole of the day. It was a par five. And frankly, it's a birdie hole. I mean, you get on that tee. If you're three under, you're thinking, I got to make a birdie or an eagle. You mentioned playing conservatively, but were you at all thinking, don't mess this up? Or were you thinking a four and I shoot a number that's never been shot before?
You know, I actually didn't know that 58 has never been shot before. So I had no clue about that, you know, about that record and about, you know, about the history. I knew that 59 was a pretty good number. And there was a bunker there at like 290 that I knew if I hit driver, I could get in. And you just don't, I feel like I didn't want to put myself in a spot where I would have to lay up like 140 or 150 out and, you know, get in trouble. So I hit three wood short of the bunker and laid up to 90 yards. And I knew, you know, on a day like that, if you're playing well, you know, a wedge in your hand will, you know, at least have 10, 15 feet and a chance to make it for another birdie.
What was your low score, not only in a tournament round, but what was your low score career-wise before Thursday?
Probably 60. I shot 62 earlier this season in Dominican Republic on the web event in the second round, I think. That was the lowest score that I've ever shot. I shot 63 at home, 10 under in my golf, my home course, but it's a par 73, so that would be 63. So, 62 was the lowest I had before this.
And how did you celebrate Thursday evening? Because, of course, as you mentioned, you had three rounds to play.
I went to dinner. I went to bed.
Really exciting stuff. The life of a professional golfer.
We got done at, I think, 7:30, and once I got done with everything, we left the golf course at 8:45, so we grabbed some dinner, and you know, I had to play the next morning at 8. So it's very fabulous, that life.
Yeah, exactly.
You're
eating and getting ready for the next day. And one of the most used cliches in golf analysis, and really you know, players talk about it, is how to follow up a low round. What's your transition from something like Thursday, where you mentioned, I mean, four shots better than anything you've ever shot before, knowing that round's over. Now you got to go out and play three more rounds, and you've got to put up numbers because, I mean, the web.com, you got to go low.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's tough. I mean, you obviously it's going to be in your mind, and you're going to have to deal with, you know, thoughts like that in your mind. But Those things just happen. You just gotta keep doing what you're doing. Obviously it worked the first day and my game plan did not change. The next 3 days, I did the same thing in the morning. I did, you know, it's just kind of stay in your routine that you did the first day and, all year long. So you just want to keep doing what you're doing. And if with golf, you never know what's going to come the next day. That's the beauty and the terrible thing about golf. You don't know what's going to come the next day. And I didn't. So you just go out there and do your best and add them up in the end. And it ended up being a good score for me in the third round. And yeah, I was really happy that I could follow up a round like that with a 65.
Yeah. And come Sunday, I mean, you're in complete control of this event. I mean, you've been playing great golf after the opening round. Did you have a number in mind as you played that course of the last 18 holes, or were you just trying to go out there and play golf?
Well, yeah, I knew that if I shot a couple under, it was going to be really tough to catch me. But my playing partner Sander actually started off 6 under through 6 holes on the last day, so it got a little closer there in the beginning and a little closer comfort, I guess. But no. I knew that, like I said, I knew if I played well and I played, you know, under par, it was going to really be really tough. And I just played really solid, like the whole day. I barely missed a shot all day and made some good putts and shot 5 under in the front nine, which, you know, gave me like an 8-shot lead, which was huge going to the back nine. So,
I have to ask you the story about the putter. You had a new putter in the bag this week, and I think new is really stretching the use of that word.
No, that putter has been in the bag for about a year.
Okay, where'd you get it from?
So I changed it last year after the web.com season was over. I not got my card back, and I was putting with all kinds of mallets and all stuff, and I talked to my coach at home and I was like, we're gonna get something as simple as possible so I can get away from a little bit of, you know, the, oh, you know, am I lining up correctly, blah 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 blah. So at a buddy's house, I found that it's an old Ping Answer. It's got no lines on it. It's got, you know, it's just as plain as you could think. And, I started practicing with it and I had a setup with it that I wanted to keep. And, it's been working really well, honestly. Even before that, I've been putting beautifully. It's kind of, you know, simplified my putting, approach. And, I'm really happy about it. And hopefully it doesn't break, because it is like 45 years old or so.
It's double your age, but hey, whatever works,
yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Who is the most random person to reach out to you and say congrats, not only on the round, but on the week?
I had a few people text me and that I didn't have numbers. Random, you know, people that you made a stayed with a couple years ago in host housing or... not anybody that I would say, wow, that I didn't expect that. No, it was all kind of the golf community. They're, you know, we're a pretty close-knit community, so you try to keep up with your buddies, and you try to keep up with the old high school teammates and all that. So, there was nobody crazy that I could think of.
Well, you move from 102 to 20 on the money list, top 25 get a PGA Tour card next year. So the win obviously was big, but now how important is it to keep this momentum going for you so you can land that Tour card next year?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, you know, I'm playing well, which is a very positive thing. But you gotta keep your expectations to the point where you just don't know what's going to happen the next week. You know, sometimes you play good golf and you miss cuts, and sometimes, something changes and you can't really figure out what's going on. I want to keep the pedal down. You know, I'm in a good position now to get in a little run.
Yeah, I'm just gonna keep doing my thing and keep you know, the outlook I want of my golf game, and then see what happens in the end. You know, we've got four more weeks before the finals, and then and then we'll see what damage we can do.
Yeah, and I had Wesley Bryan on earlier, a web.com player, on the first episode here of the podcast. And, you know, I love hearing the stories of just kind of the difference in the tours, you know, the web.com versus the PGA Tour. Yeah. So just give people an idea of kind of what a couple of weeks is like for you guys on the web.com tour. I mean, are you sharing rides? Are you guys driving to events? Are you flying most of the time? You know, how is travel and living like on the web.com?
Well, it was funny because I left yesterday. I left San Fran, Oakland at 6 a.m. Was supposed to fly to Kansas City, get there at 1, and I actually got delayed, and I missed my connection, and then we had to stay in this Salt Lake Airport for 6 hours, and then we got in at rental car place at 9, and I had to drop a buddy off, and it's just it's funny because it brings you back to you know, the normal life so quickly. And we normally share hotel rooms. It's a little different because you do have somewhat of a budget. Out there, the sponsorship money is just, you know, just so much more than out here. That you can kind of get away with, you know, sometimes even flying private or going to like a smaller airport where, you know, it's more expensive, or getting a hotel room by yourself. It's different. I love it. I mean, it's something that, you know, you got to get used to before you start doing this job, because if you don't like traveling, if you don't like staying in hotel rooms, it's going to be a tough ride for you. But it's a little different, but it's the same basic idea. It's just more means available.
Well, Stephen, I appreciate you joining us. Congrats again, not only on the 58 again, but the great week. I mean, the win was huge, and hopefully it vaults you to a good rest of this season and a top 25. Because as you mentioned, the PGA Tour, you know, you can probably room by yourself at that point.
I could room by myself. But yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna keep the pedal down and keep trying to win these next four events and see what happens.
Well, thanks a ton, man. Good luck.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, that'll do it here for this week's Clubhouse Podcast. Thanks for joining us. If you like it, jump on iTunes, write a review. We're on SoundCloud now as well, so if that's something you enjoy listening to or an app you enjoy, you can find us there as well. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. We appreciate it. Any questions, of course, send us an email at theclubhousewithshanebacon@gmail.com. Top Golf Tour's going. We'll be on Fox this week with the U.S. Women's Amateur. So many things happening. It's just incredible. So we appreciate it. We'll talk next week.